Welcome to Narratives. Nadja Spiegelman's mother was French, exotic and mysterious even to her children. The relationship between mother and daughter can be fraught with complications, as Nadja observed even as a child on family visits to her grandparents' house.
When I was a child, I knew that my mother was a fairy. Not the kind of fairy with gauzy wings and a magic wand, but one with a thrift store fur coat and ink-stained fingers. There was nothing she couldn't do. On weekends, she put on safety goggles, grabbed a jigsaw, and remade the cabinets in her bedroom. She ran a hose from her bathroom to the roof to fill my inflatable pool. She helped me build a diorama of the rainforest, carving perfect cardboard birds of paradise with her X-Acto blade. "Maman," I asked her when I was 4, "when will I be a fairy like you?" "When you're 16," she replied. And so I waited, and I watched her. Once, during a thunderstorm in Brazil, my mother pulled the rental car over to the side of the highway by a dark, deserted beach. She beckoned to my brother and me. We uncurled from the back seat and leapt out into the electric rain. We followed her, leaving my father shouting her name from the road, his voice barely carrying over the storm. We stripped down to our underwear. My mother held out her hands, one for each of us, and we ran straight into the water. The ocean picked us up and slammed us down against the sand. We screamed with laughter. We ran back in. The sky fractured with lightning, opened, fell into the ocean. The waves reared twice as tall as my mother. At the car, my father was pale, his voice quiet with awe and anger. "Jesus, Françoise," he said, shaking his head. We were late now, as usual, and my mother drove the car fast down the highway toward the pitch-black sky. Though we had been in 2 accidents, I did not know my mother was a reckless driver until I was in my 20s, when friends told me so. The things my mother did not see about herself, I did not see either. We fell asleep in the back seat, my brother and I, mouths open, gritty with salt and sand, our hair drying in wild curls. My mother disdained most dangers as American constructs, invented by timid women who washed their vegetables. She was always certain that nothing would go wrong. "No one ever told me it was dangerous to swim in a lightning storm," she would say, when I laughingly mentioned the memory years later. Her voice pitched defensively. She did not like to be teased. There were other vacations, too. The vacation when my mother booked no hotels in advance, just took off driving down the coast of Costa Rica, buying us all the strange fruits that they sold by the roadside. Once, in a forest, my mother scooped the earth into her hand and put some in her mouth and ours while she explained about building immunities. We were often sick as children, and then rarely. We knew, my brother and I, that it was only fear that led to danger. My mother cast around us her conviction that we would always be safe, and it held us like a force field. My mother ran away from Paris to New York City when she was 18. My family had always lived in the Soho loft she moved into her first year in America. We visited her family in France twice a year, her divorced parents, her 2 sisters, a cousin. They were all the family I had. 9 people in all, if I counted myself. There was no one left on my father's side. My grandmother would not let herself be called grand-mère, so we, like everyone else, called her José. José lived on a houseboat, moored on the outskirts of Paris, where the Seine doubled back to touch the city's northwestern border. She had purchased it as a shipping barge and transformed it into a luxurious home. There were cream-colored carpets and sliding Japanese doors. There was a jacuzzi in the center of the space beneath an octagonal skylight that opened like a flower, and a table that rose out of the floor at the touch of a remote control. In the guest bathroom, the walls were covered in pictures of her travels, in a sari on an elephant, in blackface and leopard pelts, in leather chaps and nothing else, alongside a certificate stating that the bearer bared her knockers at Mardi Gras 1998. My grandmother was beautiful long after she was beautiful. She carried and dressed herself in a way that left no question. She had blue eyeliner tattooed around her eyes. She never asked me about myself. There was always a moment of held breath as my grandmother seated us around her table, her choices as deliberate and pointed as a queen's. Those seated close to her were in her favor, those seated far away were not. Love was a zero-sum game. My mother, because her presence was rare, was often seated close. Her sisters, from the far end of the table, tried not to glare. Even at a young age, I was aware that my aunts were trapped in their parents' orbits, like moths with singed wings around a flame, though how I knew this, I am not sure. They were grown-ups, yet not grown-ups. They pitched their voices to the same resentful whine in response to their mother as I did to mine. During these visits, I followed my mother's lead. I knew in my bones that her family was dangerous, and she had taught us to be wary of them, like fast food or crossing Canal Street. She treated her sisters with a polite reserve she displayed toward women she did not trust. With her parents, she was as effusively kind and respectful as she would have been with someone else's parents. I followed suit. My voice went up an octave in Paris. I said mostly, "Merci, oui, merci, s'il te plaît, c'est délicieux, merci." I stood on tiptoe to kiss an endless number of cheeks. When I was young, I watched my mother brace herself before each encounter with her family, the hard looks she gave herself in the bathroom mirror, the lipstick applied like armor. At the table, much of the conversation took place in language too encoded for me to decipher, but I sensed that the banter was laced with barbs, a poison center to every compliment. And I heard the comments that were directed at me, the grave pronouncements of disaster over my newly cut bangs, the way everybody agreed with knowing nods that I certainly didn't need a second slice of cake. I dreaded those dinners, but I adored the cab ride's home. In the back seat, I felt a wash in the safety of our family, finally shrunk back to its correct four-person size, a rare feeling of unity between us. My mother was giddy with relief. "The best thing I ever did was move my life an ocean away from them," she often said in those moments. "I'm so lucky I escaped," she said at other times. "It's the only way I survived. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what it would have been like?" But I couldn't imagine. The past was always there on her body, but I couldn't see it. It was in the scars that I traced with a fingertip as a child, in the strange things that set off her anger. It was even in my own body, a feeling of damage and danger that had no name and no explanation. It was underneath everything else, that deep foundation on which we were both built. But like her French accent, which 40 years in America could not fade, and which her children, so used to her voice, could not hear, the past was too present for me to see. How could my mother ever have been a girl? I knew what it meant to be a child, how emotions could knock you flat with their sheer strength and how adults never seemed to understand. But of my mother's childhood, I knew almost nothing. Most of her scars were from accidents, a nose that broke four or five times, the place where the sharp metal spike of a fence had pierced all the way through her arm, a gash in her head from a sharp corner in a corridor of her family's apartment. "I didn't know you had a red pillow," her grandmother Mina said when she found my mother lying down in her room afterward. Those were the funny stories. It was the scars on her wrists, the scars in the soft, hidden places inside her body. Those were the scars she didn't tell me about, and I didn't ask. After the divorce, my father used to come into my room and... My mother began once, then caught herself. "I'll tell you when you're older." When I told her that my high school girlfriend had cuts all over her arms, she said, "You know, when I was that age..." Then with a quick sigh, "I'll tell you when you're older." There were moments when details slipped, when she seemed not to realize how strange certain things sounded or forgot for a moment that I knew how to listen. Her father had wandered the hallways naked, terrifying the young maids. One Christmas, he had preemptively removed her appendix. But when I asked her directly about her life, she told me only the funny stories, the easy ones, the time she and her sister broke the bed and blamed it on their obese grandmother, the time she cut her sister's hair while she was sleeping. I saw only the edges of the holes, the aftershocks of the explosions. "I'll tell you when you're older," she said, when I tried to reach for more. My mother understood. There was room for only one of us to be a girl. There was room for only one of us to be a woman.
You've been listening to Nadja Spiegelman reading from her book, I'm Supposed to Protect You from All This. Narratives is produced by Karina Wynne-Moylan of Arts Campus BFM 99.9 and is supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.